Welcome to, well, that fucked me up.
It really did.
A podcast with Luke Coulson.
And Kyle Wise.
And each week we're going to be talking to real guests about their amazing, often traumatic, life-changing events.
Focusing on stories of survival, hope, and overall triumph.
Which is flipping awesome.
Yeah.
Because we're all about that. We're all about listening to people's stories about adversity and trauma and crazy stuff. I think there really is something for everybody. There's many, many topics, many, many guests, people that really have got through some extraordinary things. Please share the love, share the show, get in touch, follow us, subscribe, click. We're trying to make it easy and open for people to discuss things that may normally feel tricky to do so. We've been on an extraordinary journey and we're glad you can join us. Enjoy the show. Welcome to yet another wonderfully jam-packed and exciting episode of Well, That Fucked Me Up with myself, Luke.
And Kyle.
And this week we've doubled the Kyles because our guest is also called Kyle.
K squared.
Hey, Kyle.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Yeah, we're doing great. Thanks for coming on. We're very excited to hear your story because I don't think we've had a story of this type before. We're going to dive straight in as we always do. And what we do, Kyle, I don't know whether to say Kyle A or Kyle B or Kyle squared. I think we can probably figure it out unless both the Kyles start talking at the same time. Then we know we've got some problems. Is Kyle, go kick us off. Start wherever you want to start. You can give us an intro or you can just dive straight on into the event or the episode and we'll shoot you some questions as we go.
Yeah. So it actually all started for me in 2018. I'd been having some issues and, with anxiety and whatnot, and had seen a doctor about it. And then on my way home from the office, I blacked out and wrapped my wife's car around a pole. And that landed me in, the hospital. Ooh. And what had been happening was I had an undiagnosed heart condition. It was atrial fib, which is with the electrical wiring of the heart. And it had gone on so long undiagnosed because it was just, I would go to the doctor and I wouldn't be having any symptoms. So they just kept giving me benzos, saying it's anxiety. And I had been in having that problem for so long, it actually sent me into heart failure. And so at the time, my heart my EF, which is, how much your heart's functioning, it was 15%. So I was in heart failure.
Holy shit. Firstly, I'm sitting here with my jaw wide open. Other Kyle is laughing, actually. He's laughing.
He's saying it so nonchalant. Yeah, it's at 15%.
It's shock laughter. Kyle, please do carry on.
So they, 34 years old, find out I'm in heart failure, and they put a defibrillator and a pacemaker in. So I've got a device, that's there for kind of backup. But the plan was, let's send you home, get you healthy enough to get on the transplant list. And they sent me home with a battery of drugs.
Oh my gosh.
That was in October of 2018. And on July, I was still, going through the process and, following up and taking my meds. July 5th of 2019. July 4th, I went to bed with some indigestion and I just thought it's because of, beers and barbecue. And I woke up the next morning, July 5th. And it was this blinding pain. Ooh. It was like lightning. Oh. And in my abdomen, it felt like someone had hit me with a croquet mallet, and was just standing on it.
Oh.
And apparently I drove myself to the ER. I don't remember that.
Oh, my gosh. You knew right then something seriously was up and you felt like that was your heart, right?
Yes. Yes. And the next thing I remember, or the next thing I know, it's July 22nd, and I'm waking up intubated and restrained to a hospital bed. I can't talk, and everyone's trying to fill me in on what happened.
So that's 17 days by my math.
Yes.
Holy and so shit.
In that time, I had 5 surgeries in 9 days. Okay, so what had happened, it was like a time bomb had went off in my abdomen. It was necrotizing pancreatitis, acute renal failure, which led to respiratory failure, and then abdominal compartment syndrome because of all the swelling.
Oh, my gosh.
And so they left me open. I had an open abdomen for 9 days, had 5 surgeries, and on the 10th day, it was kind of do or die for them. And they went in, well, I guess the evening of the 9th day, they went in and they were able to get me closed. So that was big.
Holy, can we just take a step back? So was all of that caused and as a result of the heart being so completely weak and the fact that you were on, do you think, on all that medication just to keep the blood flowing around your body?
It was, so 2 of the drugs, so I was on a battery of drugs, and I think I was taking like 7 or 8 at the time. And everyone was trying to figure out what it was. You know, pathologically, I checked out. There was no reason I should have been in that state so quickly, especially. And the 2 of the drugs that I was on, they've been known to cause pancreatitis or, you know, renal failure, not necessarily both. And so it's like I was just a lucky winner, I guess. And I was in that rare less than 2%. Of the ones that take that.
Right.
So, they'd kept me in a coma for 12 days.
Wow.
And then I woke up, they brought me out of it to wake me back up. And I was awake for, I think, 2 days. And then I went catatonic. Oof. And so no talking. The lights were on, but nobody was home. And I was scribbling some notes. I was trying to do math and all this stuff.
Do you remember that point?
Well, I do, but I don't.
Right.
Because I remember where I was when I was writing those things, but I wasn't in a hospital bed.
Oh.
I was, you know, what I compare that experience to is, you know, where you're sitting right now, whatever you're doing, close your eyes for about 2 seconds. And then if you opened them, you're in a hospital bed, restrained with an intubator, and people are trying to tell you, hey, no, none of that happened. You're actually in a hospital, and, you know, you crashed a couple of times.
Wow.
And so through the surgeries, I crashed, and I was going through my medical records not too long ago, you know, and I found one time, because they have the telemetry and all that, and, you know, it was 11 minutes.
My goodness.
And when I came out of that surgery, they had me on 4 pressors or vasopressors, which, you know, those keep your blood pressure up, keep your heart pumping. But yeah, when I found that, that was a weird experience, like seeing it like that on paper.
So it's fair to say you flatlined, you crashed and you died on a couple of occasions through all of this experience.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. And so, okay, so jumping back to when I went catatonic, I was catatonic for 2 days, right at 48 hours. And then I had a 7-minute seizure. and then it crashed again. So they called the rapid response, reintubated me. And then I woke up the next day, and it was the strangest thing. It was like just someone had flipped a light switch, and I knew why I was there. I knew what had happened. And then over the, you know, following days and weeks and months and now years, trying to kind of sort out the other experiences, you know, the dreams, the hallucinations, things like that. The PTSD, that's not something that's talked about a lot, but, medical trauma and certainly, you know, death and yes. all that's involved.
Well, let's get into that in a second, because
it bucks you up, so to speak.
definitely. What, dude, if ever there was a, well, that fucked me up story on the podcast, well, that fucked me up. And, you know, the little subheading we have is surviving life changing events. Well, just surviving dying is probably the most relevant story we've had in recent times. Can we, I really want to know about the PTSD and how that affected you, but just going back to the 17 days when you went through all of that stuff and you crashed and you had the operations and, you know, I guess they must have been battling tooth and nail to save you on a daily basis. Did you, I think this was Kyle. Kyle, do you want to ask your question now that we're at, in the throes of it, just in terms of any...
I'm still kind of blown away. I mean, that's... Yeah, so let's get into that. Like, when you flatlined, when you died, you know, I'm sure everyone thinks this. Is there anything afterwards? Is there, like, is it dark?
All right, so I guess to talk about when I think I crossed over, like... I've got to put that in context. How I know that was different was because my other dreams, hallucinations, whatever you want to call, when I was in a coma, like those, they all had conclusions and they all felt very different. You know, I had one. I was in a coma on my birthday, and a friend of mine came to see me, and I didn't realize it. It was one of my best friends, and she was in town from Denver, and she came to see me and sat with me for a couple of hours, and I didn't realize that. But what had happened to me is in my dream or in the hallucination, I was driving to Joshua Tree, and I was weirdest detail. I was in an old like Isuzu Trooper. And I never had one of those, and I always wanted one.
Wow.
Like in high school, that's what I wanted. So,
wow. So
I'm driving out there, windows down, you know, and it's still very, very clear. And I got a flat tire, so I pull over. I'm like, great, you know, in the desert with a flat, and then I see a car coming, and it's my friend Brittany, and she gets out. And I'm like, oh wow, small world. I'm going to Joshua Tree. You're going to, and we sat there and we talked for, you know, a good hour, and she helped me change my tire and got on the way.
Wow.
And then I arrived at Joshua Tree and checked in a motel. But then when I woke up, that's when I found out that, oh, actually she was here. You know, she lives in Denver.
Yeah.
And she came to town, I believe for a wedding. And,
so hearing her voice and having her sat there while you were in a coma clearly affected your conscious or subconscious.
Yes.
and instigated this dream at the exact time when she was sitting there, I guess.
Absolutely.
Oh my God.
Absolutely. And so, you know, and there's another one. It was very, very unpleasant. It was very dark. There was some murder and a fire, and it was very dark. But then the smell like caught me. And whenever like that smell hit me, like I felt calm, and then like I felt a peace come over me. And so when I woke up, I caught the whiff of like some hand sanitizer on a nurse or a doctor. And then I started smelling people's hands. And so because in my dream, every time I would smell that smell, and there was another one where that smell made it through. And I think it's Mark Jacobs number 9. I don't know. I may have it written down. But for 3 days, everyone that came in that room, I was like, can I smell your hands? Because I was trying to identify that person.
Wow.
And on the fourth day, she came in and I met her for the first time. But it was, she just had that kind, like nurturing energy. And even that made it through, you know. So,
gosh, that is insane. Okay, so now you're saying that you had these dreams when you were in your coma, but you feel like there was a moment where you knew maybe you something beyond that happened.
Yes. Yeah. So there was, I was standing like in this beautiful like prairie, and, I was standing there in the valley, the Teton Mountains. And then there was just this light that it was a brilliant, like all consuming, light, like you felt it. It was warm. Have you ever done psychedelics?
Yes. I mean,
okay, mushrooms.
Sure.
Okay. All right. So you're familiar kind of like with that, assuming you guys have had good experiences, like that like that peace, like that euphoria, you know, where just like the earth's giving you a hug. It was that on an order of magnitude. Like I can't describe it.
Wow.
And I remember sitting, you know, there were some things that I don't know if they're messages or what. you know, there were some things that I guess you could say were shown to me, or that I kind of came back with that you know, have kind of come up more and more in my memory as I've got more distance, or, you know, more yeah. time between me and that incident, which is interesting. But
did you want to share those, or you don't have to?
Well, no. So, yeah, no, I actually haven't even shared them with my wife. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's let's not do that.
Yeah, I'm not going to do it here.
But suffice
to... You know, like my daughter, for instance, you know, I saw her. It's going to be interesting when she's, you know, in her early 20s, because I saw her at that age. So I'm kind of curious to see what she looks like at that age. Wow. But and one thing that sticks out to me is, like, when I had the realization, like, oh, this is it, because it came to me very clear. It just kind of clicked.
Wow.
And I didn't it was kind of just a resolve, like, well, all right, this is it. That's all I had.
Gosh.
And but and then the next thing I know, I guess, I was sitting in this very maternal presence. Like, I didn't see anything. I didn't see a face. But it wasn't masculine. It was a very feminine, like, maternal, nurturing energy.
Mm.
And, you know, that experience followed the kind of that acceptance. Like, there was no sadness, though. Like I said, if anything, it was just that like euphoria, that peace. It's like it's a warm bear hug.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I read an article similarly to a guy describing his wife who'd been battling she was older and she'd been battling a disease for years, and she'd been in pain, and as she died, there was a moment where he said that she looked at him with this knowing look of she was in the most comfort and the most euphoric kind of almost ecstasy as she kind of, like, you know, was, I mean, it's just, it kind of ties into that sort of thing that you're saying. So gosh, this is quite something, isn't it? So does that lead? So let's get into post traumatic or post I've died or post I've crossed over to the other side. What does that do to a human? So what does that leave you with? And how is your brain? Because you said that it messes with you having gone through something like that. And then in terms of your feeling of whether there's, like, an afterlife or a heaven, does that all play into it? Thousands of questions.
Well, my brain, so that the seizure, that 7-minute seizure that I had, they had pretty much, so they had already called my family in early on in the process, 2 different times, and told them to, you know, make plans. I have a family that lives out of state.
Mm.
Call them, you know, go ahead and he's probably not going to pull through. So then, after the seizure, the surgeons, I had a team of 12 surgeons at Vanderbilt. I owe my life to those guys, literally.
Wow.
And they pulled them out and basically were talking to them about assisted living options, because they expected if I came back with brain function, I would be around a 10 or 12 year old cognitively.
Oh my gosh.
They just said, you know, after all he's been through, this is what we're hoping for, but it very well could have turned off all the lights.
Mm.
And so from that, you know, I have some focus issues. My memory is not what it used to be, but I came physically, I came away unscathed, which is crazy. So my heart, which is something else very unusual, I had an echo done after all of that to just check and make sure my heart was okay or holding together.
Mm.
And my function had improved to 40%, which was crazy. And then now over time, now my heart is I've got full function. So
what?
That is wild. Yeah.
And you were waiting prior to all of this happening. You were on the transplant plan list, if I've understood that correctly. So,
well, no, not yet.
But
not
you, yet. Okay.
Wow. Yeah, because you have to, it's a multi-step process. Financially is one, you know, preparing basically all the way around.
Right.
But yeah, I really didn't have time to, because I'd only been home from, you know, the hospital with the first time around, because I had to be readmitted for my heart like a couple of months later. So I'd only been home for a few months when that happened. Yeah. It's weird because the first the first thing that you feel is grateful, you know, like this. I remember when I woke up, I was just crying and I was writing down, you know, asking people for hugs. And you're just so, you know, you're overcome with emotion and joy and, you know, everything is beautiful. Hmm. I remember they wheeled me down to look out this window and it looked like over Vanderbilt's campus and you could see part of Midtown area in Nashville. And there was a chapel and I saw like the big dome. And it was lit up and I've never seen it before. And I've driven past it thousands of times. Mm. And when I saw it, I started bawling all over again. But then, you know, going through rehab, that was very challenging. I had to be babysat. Like I couldn't be left alone for, you know, like 6 weeks after, because there was a risk that I could split back open, you know, internally.
Wow.
And herniate everything. But, then, you know, you have that, but the gratitude is kind of tempered by a little bit of self-pity every once in a while, you know? But I guess what I wasn't expecting were the, like the nightmares, like the little things that my brain had held on to that I didn't realize. There's actually a great research department here at Vanderbilt that is studying this. It's, called an ICU delirium, post-intensive care syndrome. And a lot of what they're finding is that your brain doesn't have anything else to do when you're in a coma, right? I mean, you have your hearing, and I suffer hearing damage actually from all the monitors and stuff because I wasn't processing any other senses. And so they're cranked up, right?
Yeah.
And so the dreams, you know, they say that, you know, it's like it really happened to your brain. Like it's like it really happened. Like it was recorded.
Wow.
No different than if it actually would have happened.
It's like a false memory that was.
Yeah, a false memory. Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly. And even though you know it, you know, on an intellectual level, it's like that amygdala, you know, that tiny part of the brain, it still has it filed as, hey, this is traumatic.
Fuck.
You know, nightmares. For the most part, my nightmares are pretty much, I don't have them anymore, really. But they would be so vivid and so intense, and they would be like replays of some experiences I had, you know, in the hospital. Just from, like, one time I felt like I was drowning because I had I was aspirating on the ventilator, and the nurse, I didn't feel like she was suctioning me fast enough. And then the next thing I know, like the lights went out, and I guess they hit me with a bolus of medicine because I was making it hard for her. But, so now, you know, there's a certain sound that I hear, and there's a regular household vacuum doesn't do it. But, I was at lunch with a friend of mine a couple of months ago. Well, I guess it was right before Christmas, and we were in the restaurant and they were remodeling the space next door to the restaurant, and the shop vac, somebody turned on a shop vac and they were suctioning up, like, I guess some wet material.
Mm.
And it, like, I had like full blown panic attack. Like my heart was racing and I was like, I gotta go.
Wow.
And I got outside. And that was the first time I'd had something like that happen. Because it was the first time I had heard something so close to when I felt like I was drowning.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'd never in a million years would have thought that.
Of course.
You know, and then, you know, the medical anxiety, I guess, that's like, oh, every little ache. It's like, well, I don't want to go through that again. You know, I don't want to. When COVID first hit last year. You know, and people were talking about ending up on ventilators, and I fell down a hole.
Oh my God, I can imagine.
Because being on a ventilator is very traumatic, and I was just even the thought of that happening. And so,
terrifying.
You know, I've worked through that, but I still have that little thing in the back of my head, like, wait a minute, all right, is that, you know, is that just an ache or do you have bone cancer? You know,
yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And I know that it's ridiculous to think that, But it's that other waiting on the other shoe to drop, I guess.
But I think that once you've gone through something like that, it proves a point that we're all as fragile as the next person. And this is not similar at all. But when I had an experience with a friend dying next to me when I was a kid, it just made me feel like every single person around me was capable of dropping dead at any given second. Like it just completely switches the way your brain processes things, you know, because so I can understand where you're like, you can hardly be blamed for being a hypochondriac if you've been through what you've been through. Right.
Well, I'm doing better, you know, through therapy and things and, you know, daily self-care, I'm doing a lot better with that. But it's interesting, though, because while going through something like that completely removed my fear of death.
Interesting. But,
that's what I was going to ask.
Yeah. I mean,
have you noticed yourself, like, maybe worrying less about things like, you know, I know, like, my FICO score is like this, you know?
Yeah. So that's funny. 100%. But that's another challenge, I guess, that I forgot. It's engaging people, engaging this version of reality where people will get bent out of shape. I work in real estate and, you know, seeing people get bent out of shape over, you know, a few thousand dollars or, you know, it's very hard to care. And there's a name for it. It's actually called overview syndrome. And they found it. They kind of discovered it with the astronauts from the Apollo program. And then they started noticing it with Olympic athletes and other people. You know, they were reporting higher rates of depression, alcoholism. They're like, why is this? You know, these people have achieved the pinnacle of the human achievement, and they're still coming back broken. And what it is, it's once you have a different perspective, it is so very difficult to engage some people and to care about things enough to get involved.
That's amazing. I understand that.
Yeah. So it's interesting too, because there are things that come along with that, you know, the depression and whatnot. But yeah, that's certainly something I didn't expect. You know, I expected to come back and be like a base jumper, you know, flying planes and stuff. But
yeah,
I came back a lot more timid than I would have expected.
It's interesting because, like, working through depression and anxiety and having suffered from chronic anxiety most of my life, a lot of the way to deal with that is to work on perspective and start to dumb down some of these things that used to, you know, freak me out and triggers. But I can't imagine a world where you go so far the other side that you really don't give a shit about anything at all, you know?
Yeah. It is very strange. And I have to say, my anxiety is not really, that's not as much of an issue as the opposite problem of actually caring and finding motivation to do certain things, which is, it is interesting. And, you know, I'm still kind of learning, but yeah. So the fear of death is gone. You know, is there anything out there? I mean, I kind of have my theories now.
Yeah. What's your theory?
Well, so I grew up, I got to preface this by saying I was taught to believe crazy shit growing up. Right. Mm. I grew up Pentecostal.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So like speaking in tongues, like rolling in the floor type shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and then I got away from that, obviously, as soon as I moved out of that town. And, you know, I've kind of went atheist, and I guess now I'm a little more agnostic, but I am exploring some of the more esoteric ideas and stuff that I didn't think I would. You know, I dove into Carl Sagan real heavy and, you know, listened to Alan Watts and things like that. So, I mean, is there a heaven? I know. and if there is a creator, I feel like it's a woman. You know, Carl Sagan says, you give us one free miracle and we'll explain the rest with science. And that miracle is, how did we get here? Well, I don't know. But if we're energy and energy is neither created nor destroyed, then I think we got to get recycled somehow.
Yeah. Wow. Funnily enough, I think you said you don't, you're still undecided whether there's a heaven or not.
Well, I don't, as it's taught, I guess the canonical heaven,
yeah,
you know, of early gates.
And, yeah.
And
yeah.
No,
yeah.
No, not really. But I have gotten more into spirituality and kind of studying, like taking a step back and looking at kind of how it just, every religion kind of seems like a cover song of the previous one, you
yeah.
know? And if you look, it's always the same lesson of death and rebirth, you know, love. And then we started telling it through fairy tales in the Dark Ages and, you know, and just told through music and everything else. It's kind of that same story. So maybe there is an ancient knowledge, you know, maybe yeah. somebody was told that story or shown that story a long time ago. I don't know.
Wow.
All I know is what I've been told, like what everybody's talking about now. That wasn't my experience.
Yeah.
Maybe I went to hell. I don't know.
Oh, well, it sounds like it wasn't
that bad.
So, yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like it wasn't so bad
yeah,
after all.
10 out of 10. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So we're drawing to the end of our chat. And I wondered if, just to finish, and Kyle, host Kyle, you normally ask a couple of killer questions, but I mean, in terms of what you're doing, guest Kyle, in terms of what you're doing now, you know, you're on here, you're getting your story out there. Is there a kind of a message you want to get to people? Or is it more that it's just cathartic for you to talk about your experience?
No, there is a message. Mm. And I would say there's a message of hope. Mm. You know, I've talked about maybe working on a book or even like a journal for patients or for patients' families, because there are times that I know my family advocated for me and some members of my family have a medical background. So luckily they knew, but just with simple questions about medicines and things like that, I had a bad reaction to one type of medicine and it made me go crazy. And you know, having someone be like, "Hey, don't give him that medicine. This mm-hmm. is what happened." And so, I guess it's patient advocacy, mm. you know, ask questions.
Yeah.
Talk to you. Don't lie to your doctors. But, you know, and hope. And healing is not a linear process. Enlightenment is not this a destination. You know, there are some days I wake up zen as fuck. You know, I'm enlightened. And, you know, nothing. Like, I am one with nature. I've got sunshine coming out of my fingertips.
Oh, my God.
And then the next day I wake up and it's everything I can do to get out of bed and get out the door, you know?
I relate to that so much.
What's that?
I said, I relate to that so much.
Yeah. So, that's another message is healing is not a linear process, mm. you know? And so give yourself some grace, some self-compassion, you know, when you have those intrusive thoughts of, well, why am I not happy that I'm not sick? Or why am I not happy that you mm. know, why am I not more grateful? That's something I used to ask myself, which silly, so I beat myself up about not being grateful, but
yeah.
Self-care, self-compassion, you know, and
wow,
it's great. You know, we all get one dance, and well, maybe and nobody knows when, at least nobody knows when this song's over, you know, so yeah. Enjoy it, lighten up.
Wow, there's a message right there. Host Kyle, anything, any parting words?
No, I mean, that was it. I mean, the only other question is gonna be like, what do you argue about after an experience like that? Like, you know, if you're with somebody, like,
I don't, honestly, like, arguments haven't really been existent. There's nothing to, you know, and you cut toxic people out of your life almost instantly, you know, and you start living a lot more bullshit free just mm. out of circumstance, you know, mm. not because I went through some guru's class or anything. It's mm. just, you just come back and you just don't give a fuck. And,
mm. I love
you know, and that's, can be very freeing, but it's also a double-edged sword some days. You know, so there are some days I just sit and lay in a hammock and smoke a joint, but that, unfortunately, we can't do that. We've got to participate in this capitalist dystopian charade. So,
see, I told you you'd get a good answer with one of your questions, Kyle. That's really great. I love it. Well, we're going to call it and, I just think this has been an absolutely jaw-dropping episode of the show. And guest Kyle, thank you so much for coming
yes,
on. By the way,
you.
Your wardrobe where you're doing your recording is super crystal clear, I think, and we have to invest in one of those wardrobes.
Good.
And yeah, do stay in touch. And anything, you know, I was about to say, if it happens again, do get in touch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I will.
That's not what I meant. But it's been brilliant, and thank you for coming on.
Oh, thank you. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, thank you, guys. I enjoyed it.